Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
I love a good victory Wednesday morning Football 52 podcast with UNC head coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, 17-3 over Chadron State. Congratulations, my friend. You can't win them all if you don't win that first game. That's what I found.
Yeah, that's right. Plenty of room for improvement for us, and I think that's a good thing because I think about the best mindset a team can have is to be coming off of a win, which is the ultimate objective in terms of a result, and we got the result. But I don't think that every player on the team, and certainly not in every facet of the game, did we accomplish what we wanted to accomplish. So credit to Chadron State; they played very rugged, tough, and they were tough minded, and they challenged us. I believe they made us better, and I know we can continue to strive to get better for our next opponents.
You talked about that last week on the podcast too. One of the things I noted was you talked about how hard they play. This is a gritty group that's going to go after it no matter who they're going against. And you certainly saw that. You got off to a hot start and then things kind of slowed down. They settled down a little bit. But, that was something you had mentioned was we got to be careful. Years ago, Chadron State came in, as you mentioned last week too, they came into Greeley and they put the stomping on the UNC Bears. So I know that was in the back of your mind, and you guys weren't in that position to overlook this opponent at that point. It certainly showed from the get-go in this game against Chadron State.
Yeah, we jumped out to the early lead. That had something to do with the way the game went from there. To jump out to a two-score lead, any team would likely do, or in my opinion, any smart team in the sport of football, is at that point try to build on the lead conservatively. I mean, high reward plays offensively are also high risk. There's no such thing as a high reward offense that's low risk. It's when you're putting the ball in the air, when you're dropping your quarterback back, really good things can happen and bad things can happen. And you can do that in the run game too. There are more, to put it in a triple option sense, when the triple option starts pitching the ball, bigger plays happen. But most option coaches will tell you that, they want to really force the defense to have to pitch the ball. They would rather just keep giving it to the fullback, having the quarterback keep the ball almost between the hashes and vertical. And so that's one disappointment for us, is we were not able to build on the lead conservatively.
Well, but also on that note too, there with those great risks, I mean, you played pretty clean football. Those turnovers can, no matter who you're going against, turnovers can flip games upside down. So being cognizant of that, knowing, okay, we got a lead early, not that we want to be extremely conservative, but one interception, one fumble, and who knows, a scoop, and they get pretty good field position out of that, could flip that game upside down. So yeah,
that is the two-score lead conundrum. Two possessions in football can be a lot. I think we had five possessions in the first half. And so that'll just kind of give people an idea. I think when you're just watching the game, you don't really think like that as a fan. I don't think that way when I'm watching a game as a fan, an NFL game, et cetera. But there are only a finite number of possessions in most football games. And with a team like us and a team like Chadron, who both are going to make sure that we're running the ball around 50%, the possessions can be a really small number. And so a two-possession lead is a big lead. A lot of times if you get a three-possession lead, you feel like you can get a little more aggressive and take a little higher risk. And so that's just kind of where we were at. Like I said, we had every intention of building on a two-score lead, and we're not able to do that. So credit Chadron with that, and then also point to some places that we can get a lot better.
I want to get into some of the specifics on this game, some of the standout players for you too. But you called this on the podcast. You said, watch out for the Lightning. Watch out for the lightning. Right. We hope we don't get into a situation where it's delayed. How long was the game delayed again? Because it happened in the third quarter.
About 2 hours. Yeah. And it really put it – we had a great – the best crowd that we've had since I've been at UNC. And I think a big part of that is our recruiting and the way we've recruited Colorado kids. We've got well over 60 kids now on our roster that are Colorado – they call Colorado home. Obviously, families and friends and relatives are coming out. And then Chatham State had 40 or so from the state of Colorado on their roster. So a really big Chatham had support, and they filled their section. Our section was you know, as full as I've seen it, and a fantastic crowd that was into the game. And then, you know, after that lightning delay, I can't blame people for not getting back out. There was just like there is no – I don't think there was any way to really communicate with fans and say, okay, the game is going to start again in 20 minutes, which is what we were waiting on.
Yeah.
Just so for some insight, the way that those lightning delays work, we've got a monitor, an app, so to speak. And every time there's a lightning strike within kind of like a 6 mile radius, the clock resets for another half hour. And so for a while there, it just kept resetting at 29 minutes. It would go back to 30. 29 minutes, it would go back to 30. There was a lightning strike, you know, less than every minute. And then it would start to look promising, and it would get down to 21 minutes or something, and then there would be another lightning strike. And then down that last one, we could see on the radar, okay, the storm's gone. How in the heck was there another lightning strike? So that had to have been the last one. And then, you know, at that point, we got the boys back ready to go, and they came out, and I thought really handled that well. They came out rolling on offense and defense.
Well, and I want to talk about like what goes into the delay process, but it was fascinating, Coach, because I got the game on my iPad. I had to go back later and watch the full thing because the kid just has me all over the place. But we're sitting there. I'm watching your game. We're in Fort Collins, just north of Timnath a little bit, and we get a loud boom, lightning. We're 35 minutes away, whatever. Right when that boom hits, you guys start clearing the field. It was insane. Wow. I was like, wow. So a lightning strike hits there and UNC at the same time. It was right before that, too, when Peter Castelli rolls out, ends up getting the long game with his legs.
It was the last play.
Goes down. I noticed, I thought it looked like he was limping off the field, but maybe we'll get into some of that, too. And then after you go on the lightning delay, well, my brain goes to maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they have more time now to evaluate him. He can come back. And I want to get to the quarterback stuff because I know that's a big topic. What happens during a lightning delay? What are you guys doing at that point?
Obviously we had prepared for it because we could see it coming. And I can remember a time in coaching where we didn't have, you know, weather apps on our phones. You know, we didn't have cell phones.
Just have a spotter somewhere.
Like right. Well, what we had were these old, like the trainers would carry around these kind of, they seem so antiquated now, but it was just like an electronic type of box.
Yeah.
And it wasn't super accurate. I mean, the trainer would say, hey, there's a lightning strike. And you're like, there's not even a cloud in the sky. There's no wind. Like, what are you talking about? And so now it's obviously much more accurate. We can see the storms come in and out. We saw it coming for a few days. And so what we planned on doing was recreating a full game week of preparation within the lightning delay. So we went back and took the players through the game on video. We separated out the offense, defense. It was really nice to be at home. You know, we had the advantage in that situation because we had more facility access than Chatham State did. But we were able to split the offense and the defense. We reviewed what went right, what went wrong, what we could get better at. We scripted what we call our control down. Control down is like first and 10, second and 4-6. You know, not situational calls on offense and defense. We scripted those out and went through them with our players. And then we had a full condensed warm-up. Chatham State kind of elected to have a post-halftime warm-up where they came out and just kind of did some calisthenics. But we went through a full warm-up where we did individual, we did 7-on-7, we did team. We started to kick a field goal and a punt, and the officials shut us down and said, hey, we got to get going. It's time to start. And so we didn't get that part in. But I think our players were of the mindset of, hey, we're restarting a new game here almost.
Yeah, that's wild. So what was it? Pretty late in the third quarter too, wasn't it? About 4 minutes left?
Two minutes left. Two something left.
Castelli rolls out, gets that big gain. I think it was like 15, 16-yard run.
Right.
And then goes down. And as soon as he didn't get up instantly – you know, you and I have spent so much time talking about injuries to quarterbacks, especially Peter Castelli. What's going through your mind at that point, Coach?
Initially, it's just all about Peter, you know, and because we develop relationships with each one of these guys, and we have one of the sometimes difficult parts of being a coach is kind of parsing the difference between, you know, in this context, Eric Gibson was going to be the next guy in, and so there's excitement for Eric. There's thoughts of, okay, what is the right preparation for Eric? Is there some words of encouragement? What are the plays that suit him a little better than maybe Peter? And then the other side of me simultaneously is just, okay, concern for Peter's. Mm-hmm. Okay, what can I say to Peter? Is there something encouraging in this moment? What is the injury actually? How long are we going to deal with this? Is this going to be one play, one game, 1 year? And so as I'm walking over there, the Shadron head coach kind of, you know, he saw me coming over and he said, I think it's just the wind, you know, trying to kind of reassure me because he knows that Peter's a really good player. And that's what it looked like. And it actually, there was partial truth. On that one play, Peter, you know, about to rip off about a 70-yard touchdown, turned the corner on the whole defense, and a great effort by one of Shadron's safeties just stretched out and fingertipped one of Peter's shoes, which caused Peter's one shoe to hit the back of his other calf. Mm. So he sprained his ankle lightly, would have come back from that in a play or two, but he sprained his ankle, he landed on the ball, knocked the wind out of himself, and then the big one was he got his collarbone broken. So, you know, a non-throwing shoulder, collarbone, that could be a few weeks. There's a chance he could come back this season, but, you know, a lot of, you know, rehab and work to do between now and then to figure out what's best for Peter's future.
So there is a chance that he could actually come back at some point this season.
There is, and my only kind of hesitation in admitting that is we really want to have Peter and the medical staff take the lead. You know, we want to consult with Peter's parents. Like, if I start talking too much about the date that we anticipate Peter back, you know, it's I think it's disrespectful to that process. It's disrespectful to the current guys because we you know, as Peter was voted team captain, so mm-hmm. he's going to know this better than anybody. All of a sudden, you know, the offensive coordinator's job, my job, everybody on the team, our job is to support the guy that's stepping into the role now and rip off a bunch of victories. And so, you know, there's just a we're simultaneously moving forward as coaches, players, team, et cetera. And part of that is Peter's process as well.
Yeah, and it's just I felt for you guys because we spent so much time on this podcast last season. It was like almost every game.
Right.
You know, number one quarterback goes down, number two quarterback goes down, number three. It was just that revolving door of quarterbacks going down. But how important was it for you guys on that possession? Castelli goes down mentally. Who knows what's going on with your players? The lightning delay happens. Come back, you drive down, and you go get a field goal. Like how that might be one of the things, not just for that game, but also a mental building block for the rest of the season. Hey, everything just went crazy for a while with the delay and our quarterback going down, and then you still were able to go down and get some points.
That was a really encouraging, the accuracy of our field goal unit. Jacob Willig, you know, the guy that culminates the field goal unit, but there's always a snap, a hold, and good protection, and that goes into that as well. The composure of Eric Gibson, who started the game as the backup quarterback, but he always has had great command of the huddle. Had he had one more vote, he would have been named one of our alternate captains, and we only have we only have eight, two captains and six alternates, and he would have been the next vote getter, which is pretty impressive for somebody who is clearly our backup. So I think the team does have a lot of confidence in him. He's one of the best I've been around in the huddle when he just steps into the huddle and starts talking to the team and calling out the play. There's a lot of command, and so you know he obviously felt like Peter was the best man for the job, and there are going to be some real challenges to losing him. But that's not to say there's not a lot of excitement about what Eric can bring. And I think you saw that when he marched the team down and culminated in a field goal.
So talk to us a little bit about Eric Gibson Jr. I was on the opponent podcast yesterday, Coach, talking about the Bears. And someone said, hey, can you tell us something about Eric Gibson Jr.? And I do have that fun. Like, I didn't talk to him at all. But when I was out at practice during the spring, there was a gentleman, and I knew he was a quarterback, waiting to talk to you. And I was watching him throughout practice. I mean, he's the backup, but he is so vocal. He is cheering everybody on. He's cheering the receivers on. He's cheering the DBs on when they make great plays. He's cheering his other quarterbacks on, Castelli included. And then practice ends. I'm talking to you, and there he's standing there politely waiting for you to get done with that conversation. And I don't need to know what was in that conversation, but that stood out to me. That was something that I was like, this is a guy that is the backup, but he is doing everything in his power to be that great teammate. So I just thought that was interesting. Obviously, you can shed some light on who Eric is a little bit more. So talk to us about the new starting quarterback.
Number one, the observation that you made, 100% spot on. He brings energy to every practice. He has one of the things that I've really had to change first about our practice and game day culture was the what is appropriate in-game talking? What is appropriate in-game practice talking when we're kind of talking trash, right?
Yeah, sure.
Not appropriate to be on the sideline talking to trash against somebody who's in the game. And that's taken some time. Like we literally have had to preach on that, work on that, kick guys off the field, et cetera, because that's not what a championship team does. Like if you're on the field and you want to jaw back and forth, my kind of rule is make it about 50-50. Acknowledge the other guy for being a good player, or what's the point of trash talking anyway? If you're that dominant, what are you out there trash talking for? But if you want to hype yourself up and try to get in the opponent's head a little bit, say, I'm going to get you this time, that's the kind of stuff that I think shows respect for the opponent, can bring out the best in a player when you kind of put your words out there and try to back them up. All the other stuff is just clown show, in my opinion. Well, Eric brings that naturally. Like if the defense makes a great play in practice, he's recognizing that, right? If the offense makes a great play, he's recognizing that. And usually it's about his own team, right? And then he's a guy too, and I've noticed him a lot using the coaching points. So like our defensive backs coaches a lot of times say, like if a DB is beat in man-to-man coverage, one of the things we say is relax and run. Just relax and run. Like you don't give up at that point. You don't act like you've pulled a hamstring, and you don't panic. You just relax and run. And then the quarterback has to put the ball on the money in order to still complete that play. So relax and run. And you'll hear Eric say that all the time, like if a DB is beat, relax and run, which is a way of kind of coaching him up, but also giving him some crap like, hey, you got beat on that play.
I love it. And I'm curious to see what he's going to do with this opportunity. I mean, you guys are going to Colorado State, not that far of a trip for you, to Canvas Stadium. It's their Ag Day, all that stuff. So it's probably going to be a pretty big crowd. We talked about this. I think it's going to be on Altitude TV. So locally, a lot of people are going to be on this. What a way to jump in to the fray here for the UNC Bears at quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. That's I'm sure he's played it out in his mind. Every backup at every position is always, thinking of the ways that they could get involved in the game. But you're never hoping that it's because of injury. That's not the way you want to do it. But at the same time, it's part of football culture. And so, he was ready for his moment last week. New challenge this week. New opponent. New environment. And not at home. So there are going to be some real challenges. We struggled in the environment last year. We had this last week some very uncharacteristic special teams errors. And last year when we went to Colorado State, we went 3-and-out on the first drive, and then we send the punt team out there. We only got 10 guys. And so, we have to have that delay, and now we get our 11th guy out there. But, the whole punt team was kind of shaken in that moment. Mm-hmm. And the reason we only had 10 guys is because there was a coach and a player who were, like, getting excited about the chance to play defense. Like, hey, fellas, it goes offense, punt, then defense. There's always a sequence with a special team in the middle unless you get a turnover. And so we were just discombobulated by, the magnitude of the crowd and the excitement of the game and the fact that we have so many Colorado kids that would like to play well in front of a Colorado crowd.
Coach, I do want to go back to the win because I think it was huge. It was great to get that win. Just one more question on the quarterback side. Obviously, you said Eric Gibson Jr. going to be the guy. Will we see Hank Gibbs in some kind of capacity? Are we willing to share that?
Sure,
or what does that look like?
Yeah, that's no secret for us. I mean, Hank came in last game and that sometimes for us it's four down territory or it's a change up or it's just a chance to Hank plays tight end as well. And so from a defensive coordinator standpoint, when Hank comes in the game, you got to kind of quickly determine, is he going to be in there at quarterback or is he going to be in there at tight end? So, yeah, we will continue to use Hank that way all season long. He's a real weapon. He can, you know, he's very capable of throwing passes too. He's got completions on film that people can see. And then, we have a short yardage package as well with him. So, yeah, there's no question you'll see more than one quarterback take a snap.
Well, let's talk about some of the standouts in this game, too. How about on the running game side of it? Matthias Price is funny. Miles McClarity's mom was in studio last. She is awesome, by the way. She was in studio for the guys' Wine at 9. You can imagine what that was like. And we kept asking, so we do this show called the Rocky Mountain College Kickoff, where we're talking Bears, we're talking Wyoming, CSU, CU, all Air Force. And we were asking the listeners, like, who do you think is going to be the standout player between all these guys, all these teams? And she threw it out and she said, I know how this kid runs. I know what he's about. And she threw it out and said, Matthias Price is going to go off in this game. And he had a really good game.
Yeah. And he came, you know, that three running back rotation there. And I'll put Gwynn in as a fourth. Gwynn came in late in the game, really got some tough yardage for us in kind of the 4-minute drill. But Matthias, there were kind of three different guys that were named starters on any given day throughout training camp. And it wasn't scripted by us. We weren't saying, hey, let's really juggle this thing around. It was just every time we had a live scrimmage, who ran the best, who ran the most courageous, who secured the football the best. And Matthias really was named the starter for that Shadron game pretty late in training camp, and then kind of held on to it for about a week and really delivered on game day. So really proud of the effort that he made. Our offensive line, give them credit. Got a lot of tough rushing yardage. I think we had an advantage in size, and we leaned on that. But we can also play much better on the offensive line. I think we played a very cerebral game on the offensive line. There were a lot of challenges with Shadron's system. They did a lot of pressures and twists and folds, and that created some indecision by our offensive line. We've got to do a better job of kind of taking the fight to the defense as we move forward in the season.
Who else kind of stood out to you? Again, you can look at box scores, whatever, but I know Fisher Clemens, he had the one catch, but yeah, what he was doing blocking and everything else, those are big things that you're paying attention to, obviously.
Yeah, Fisher's really an elite tight end, does a great job of catching the football. I think just had the one target, but it was a big-time catch on a seam route. And the ball floated a little, which is really difficult for a lot of tight ends because that's a big body to get to get coordinated and get up in the air. He had to kind of rise up for that one. He had to high point catch it. And those things are not easy. But he just consistently makes the grabs. He's improved in his blocking so much. He's gained a lot of good, solid strength and mass in the time that we've been here. And he's a real leader for us in every way. There is no player on our team that does not call Fisher Clemens a friend. And he's a leader by example in every way.
Going with that on the receiver side of things, Braden Monroe did his thing. Also Carver Cheeks. I think it continues to be a really fascinating story going through the portal stuff and working his way back up, coming out, producing for you guys. That's a great story. And then Braden Monroe, obviously, you've talked highly about him too. So both those guys expected to do something big this weekend.
Braden has been solid from day one. He's humble. He knows where he needs to improve. He understands strengths and weaknesses. He just keeps going out there and doing what we ask. Was glad that showed up for him. Had the nice opened up the scoring with that nice long touchdown pass, a little bit of a breakdown in the secondary for Shadron. And I think Peter surprised, being able to roll to his left. He surprised the secondary there. They came up a little short on their breaks to the ball. And so Braden takes it the distance. Carver really came on a little later in the game with some nice catches, made a great catch on a freeze play where the defense jumped off sides and kind of called it a free play, right? Did a great job on that one, blocked well all game. And most importantly for Carver, I've always been apprehensive since he did enter the portal and then come back. And the fact that, we said, we don't have a spot for you. We gave away your scholarship. You'll have to come back and re-earn it. You know, did I break trust with that? Did I do that the wrong way? You know, we probably, as he well knows, we probably can always find a little bit of scholarship opportunity. And yet, you know, we asked him to come back and prove that to his teammates. And he's just handled it like better than I would have at that age. And he's doing everything that he needs to do, not just to earn the scholarship, which is kind of, you know, financially, that's a major difference in a young man's life. But I think he's just mature enough to know that that's just the financial piece. And really, his primary goal is to just deliver for this team and help turn around the UNC Bears and lead the way. And that's what I see out of him every day.
On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, anytime you can keep any team, you know, without scoring, you know, hold them to no touchdowns, they got three. Obviously, there's a lot of dudes that stand out. Talk to us a little bit about what you saw specifically on the defensive side.
Sure. I thought the defense did an admirable job. Again, room for improvement. We've got a list of things that we need to do better, will do better. But, you know, give Shadron some credit now. They had some really good skill players, had a receiver from right over in Fort Collins, Pooter High School, and Tommy Thompson, one of the best receivers that we faced. He would be an excellent receiver in the Big Sky, runs a 10-8, runs the track for the track team at Shadron. And my understanding is Shadron doesn't even have a physical track. And to be clocking 10-8 in the offseason as a football player at 6'4",
yeah,
you know, that was really impressive. And he played like that. And he played, you know, like he wanted to make a statement in near his hometown. Excellent quarterback that could start anywhere in the Big Sky. So they really did have some connections. And they were patient rushing the football. Their yards per rush were kind of where we would like to hold it at that point or below, at less than 4 yards. But they didn't give up on it. And so they did present some real challenges in keeping their offense balanced. But, yeah, you know, I, during the lightning delay, I went in with the defensive staff and we're, you know, things were getting a little contentious and heated. I was talking about some adjustments to the things that I saw Shadron doing well. And, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, as there always is, some different ideas, and we're going back and forth. And I want that. I encourage that. And I don't want any yes men. And so we're kind of talking there. And then all of a sudden I just kind of broke the tension. So I bet you, you know, I bet you didn't expect me after giving up 1 point a quarter that I would be in here, you know, all over you guys like this. Like, yeah, you know, okay, well, we got to get better. 0 points a quarter is what we want. So really proud of the way the defense played. Some of the players of the game recognized by the coaching staff, Levi Little, McCour, those guys played, McCour Abram, those guys played really well up front. Zach Nowatzky played well on the front. Really, the whole defensive line, there was a rotation that just kind of kept everybody fresh. They played well. Zach Nowatzky from the linebacker position was very productive. Frankie at the safety slash nickel position, Frankie Morales, played really well. Derek Jones got the interception there at the corner position, and I think made some strides in kind of his first Division I football game. He's coming in from the junior college, so yeah, a lot of guys that we're excited about going into the future. A lot of and most importantly, defense played really, really hard, and that's always objective number one on defense.
I mean, I know any win is exciting. It's big. But for you guys, last year you got the one win, which was a big win over a ranked Weber State team. How great does it feel to get this one? So, I mean, first game of the season, you start off 1-0. Like, that's got to be a big time mental booster, right?
So inside the team, every win feels great. Anybody from the outside, it was a Division II team. You should have beat them by 30 or 40 or whatever it is. It's like, that's just logo football, and one of the real gratitudes that I have during my time working at BYU, and for part of that time we were independent before we transitioned to the Big 12 there in the late part, we played a national schedule. I mean, we would play at Wisconsin, at Tennessee, at USC, but we would also play, you know, Western Kentucky, Liberty, and San Jose State. And so there's like on a week to week basis, we'd play a big logo and then we'd play a small logo. Mm-hmm. And we started to use that terminology because the fans never appreciated. You know, they thought if we go and beat Tennessee, that you know, that we should kill Toledo. And that actually happened one year where we went to Tennessee, beat Tennessee, and then the next week lost at Toledo. Mm. And as coaches and players, we knew that Toledo was better than Tennessee. You know, Toledo was a really good football team that year.
Yeah.
But you just can't, sometimes you can't explain that to fans. And so, like I said, on the inside, we don't play against Shadron's helmet logo. We play against a football team, their plays, their players, and we had a lot of respect for them going in. We want to win every game by as many points as possible, but in no way are we going to kind of poo-poo on a winning effort against the team. We, you've heard me say it before, we respect every opponent, but bow to no program.
Yeah, well, and again, it's a team that came in and beat the UNC Bears, you know, several years ago, and it was bad, as you talked about. So, no, you know, at this stage, getting those wins, whoever it is, and Shadron State, there's a lot of those guys on that on those rosters. We know how this goes.
Oh, yeah.
Guys just get overlooked. They don't get their tape doesn't get out there. Maybe their coaches aren't helping them get out there. They end up on teams, and maybe you look at some of those guys and say, he should probably be in the Big Sky or wherever. I mean, there's a lot of that that goes on, not just with Shadron State, but throughout the entire country.
There's been a lot of speculation in the media about transfer portal and NIL making the rich richer and the poor poorer. Well, the thing that people that is off most people's radar that are kind of pontificating, they're just talking about Power Four and Group of Six or whatever the designation is now, and that could be true. That, you know, the Power Four could be pulling further and further away by collecting all the talent, but most Group of Five coaching staffs have this, you know, desire to kind of move up through the business. And so they're trying to do it the same way. They're into NIL. They're mm-hmm. into the portal. They're trying to take transfers and rebuild every year with a bunch of transfers. The Division IIs, and I would say our model of recruiting by necessity because of our funds is a little more Division II. We're about player development. And we're about high school development, high school recruiting. And those kids are really flying under the radar because it really doesn't matter how good you get at a Shadron State.
Great point.
You know, Colorado is not, or Nebraska is not going to come and recruit you because their coaching staff, you know, in large part are building their names as position coaches by their 247 recruiter ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to generally get a guy out of Shadron State to bump up your recruiting ranking and make you attractive to Alabama or wherever you're trying to get to as an assistant. So it's a really interesting dynamic right now. Last time Shadron State came here, it was 31-0. And then some people that remember say, well, yeah, that was when they had Danny Woodhead. And I'm like, yeah, no, you're forgetting. It was 31-0. They had Danny Woodhead didn't play defense. Mm. It was 31-0.
Yeah,
they
right.
held a Division I team to zero. They that same year, Montana State beat Colorado. And the very next week, Shadron went up and beat Montana State.
Mm. So, I mean, yeah, that well, and that's fascinating to hear that, too, because, you know, the national talk is, well, the Ohio States and the Texases, they're just going to keep going recruiting. Well, then the other teams are copying them that are a tier below. So now you're just rotating players throughout the Power Four and the Group of Five, transfer portal. I mean, most of these teams now are making their bulk of their roster every year through the transfer portal. There are recruits, but not that many. Where the guys that now are getting overlooked because the transfer portal is there are the Shadron States, are the big, you know, some of the Big Sky schools too. So I think that's fascinating. You're going to get a lot of big time players that 5 years ago could have played on Team A, but now they're playing for these teams. So that's fascinating to kind of document and watch out for.
Absolutely, yeah. Every coach in our conference can see the players that are kind of poached out of the Big Sky. And it's the like award winners. It's the publicized ones. We as coaches, we know that there are a lot of good players in the Big Sky, and sometimes, you know, four or five elite guys at one position. But it's the all conference guy that gets taken to the Power Four level, and then you can kind of see what's going on. Oh, this is being driven by the websites, apps, recruiting rankings. It's not necessarily being driven by, you know, coaches at Power Four programs really getting in and studying the Big Sky to determine who the best fit is for their program if they're looking in the transfer portal.
100%. Coach, you guys go to Fort Collins next to take on Colorado State, and we talked about that game a lot last year. That was a 10-point game in the third quarter, and obviously you started going. I think that was the game last year that Castelli went down first and did come back later in the season, but that was the original injury there for Peter Castelli. But they're there was a moment I could, because I was at that game, I was in the press box, but you could feel it almost like, are the Bears going to mess around and maybe pull off this upset? CSU loses to Washington 38-21. And now you're getting the talk on Rams' side. They look at this and go, oh, it's a get-right game for the Rams going up against the Bears. How does that kind of thing grab you?
Yeah, mostly just unaware of that, but it's predictable, right? Like, there's a big difference between being a fan. I'm a fan of in other sports and really other levels. When I pay attention to NFL football, it's mostly as a fan, unless I know some coaches or players that are playing on the roster and kind of pulling for them individually. It's just as a fan. And so we all get that, but the transitive property of football, football especially, it just doesn't work in the logo game. So,
You proved that kind of last year, I thought. A lot of Rams people thought, oh, this is going to be a 40-point blowout, by halftime, 10-point game in the third quarter.
Any game can turn into a blowout when you start to get, some turnovers and things like that. When at Southern Utah, we went and played the UNLV one year and beat them by 30-something points. But we also had three pick sixes. And the overall, total offense was about the same. Had the other team had three pick sixes, it would have been the exact opposite score. And so that's kind of, I think whether Colorado State, blows out UNC or UNC blows out Colorado State, blowouts usually happen when there's like a significant turnovers, unexpected kind of like anomaly type plays. Our guys are just looking to go in, I'm sure, as Colorado State is too. They're not playing against logos. We want to just play well by our own standards and see how we measure up. And I think to a large degree, Colorado State's kids are probably doing the same thing. I don't know of any athlete who really looks at it like the fans do in terms of what's the point spread.
Yeah.
Let me cover. That's not what it's about.
Yeah. And again, talking to you over a year and a half, we've certainly learned that more and more too, that you guys view things so much differently than how the fans do, even the media views these games. When you look at CSU, obviously they end up, it was a close game. It was 21-21 at one point in the third quarter. Washington ends up pulling away. You had an interception and then they went for a fake field goal, didn't get that. Washington ends up winning 38-21, but that was certainly a better showing for the Rams than what they did last year to start the season going to Texas, which was pretty bad for them. What kind of stands out to you as you kind of assess the film on Colorado State?
Well, you talk about an environment. They had a similar challenge that we're going to have this week, where it's just a new environment. At Washington, of all the places that I've been over the years, that I consider that the toughest place to play. Oregon is smaller. There's kind of a culture at the University of Washington and in Seattle, and there's the stadium has kind of got this echo. Oregon's just like loud to be loud. They're trying to prove something as a kind of a small town that can, and it's almost like playing an NFL game in Seattle. And I'm 0-3 there, player, coach. I never had success there, so. Even watching Colorado State battle there was really impressive to me, because I do think they had some of those challenges of like, okay, let's get in here, let's look around, let's recognize that the field's the same size, and let's believe that we can play. And they did. They played toe-to-toe with a really highly ranked recruiting roster and good solid football team in the Washington Huskies.
Yeah. I mean, it was much different for CSU than, like we said, that Texas game. They tried to go out there and show that they belonged on the same field as this team. But you playing CSU last year, a lot of new faces. They still have the same quarterback, a couple of their same skill guys, but Torrey Horton's gone. On the defensive side, that's a completely new situation there.
Defensive coordinator. Yeah, new coordinator, very aggressive in terms of their blitz packages. There's no way of knowing what they're going to be for us, but that looks like their identity is to really be a havoc rate defense and tackles for loss, sacks. I think they ended up with three sacks against Washington. And Washington's not an easy team to sack. Very, very big physical offensive line, very athletic quarterback. They get rid of the ball on time. Jed Fish and his offensive groups have always done a good job of that, not taking a lot of sacks. So They really Colorado State's got some aggressive philosophies on defense, doing a really nice job with it, and I think their kids play with a lot of pride in that system, and they're willing to take the challenges and take the risks.
What was it like for you guys last year going to Colorado State and Canvas and seeing that there's a lot of people there, and I think it was Ag Day last year, wasn't it, when you guys went? So obviously that's one of those where people, they like the pumpkin orange and the alfalfa and all that stuff. They just go to kind of celebrate that. But what was that like for you guys? And then ultimately, like we've talked about a million times, you were in this game late.
Yes. I think number one, excitement for our, for any kid on our roster, for any time you have a chance to play up a level, whatever that means. And like I said, sometimes I've been on teams where it's the group of five playing at the Power Five or whatever the current designation is or was at that time. We used to call it the BCS versus the non-BCS, mm-hmm. right? And I've been in those. I've been a Division III school playing a Division II school. I've coached that, and I've played, what they say playing down a level just last week, in terms of the fan designation. So there's that excitement. There's a chance for all of our guys to say, kind of to themselves or prove to the people that are watching, the people that care about them, hey, I'm good enough to step in this game against these players that were more highly recruited and have more resources and a bigger stadium and all that. So I think there's motivation in that. I think there's an element of just fun. There's an element of we all dream about playing in the big moments on the big stages is something we all talk about. Well, that's part of a big stage, right? In some ways, practice every day is a big stage. Like these are competitive moments on a day in and day out. But there's a realness to stepping into a stadium that's bigger than you're used to, a crowd that's bigger than you're used to. Student section right behind us is how it was last year. I'm sure it's the same. And they had a great, and it's a home opener. All that stuff we expect to impact us, and we expect all those things to be a challenge that we have to somehow overcome.
Are there interesting things that you do throughout practice? Because you talked about knowing that lightning was going to happen last week, so you're trying to simulate some in-game stuff there, especially going to Fort Collins last year and playing CSU. I mean, it's not like it's the loudest place in the world. I mean, they're getting some good fans and stuff, but it's not like Washington or some of these other schools across the country. But knowing that it is their Ag Day and all that stuff, are there interesting things outside of just the X's and O's that you do to prepare for going to a larger stadium?
Yes, for sure. We bring in, we pipe in the music to practice. We have a cart that follows the offensive huddle around and makes it difficult to call the play in the huddle. And then the offensive cadence makes it difficult on the cadence and the communication. Generally, you wouldn't expect that it's going to be loud when our defense is on the field because the fans are, intelligent and trying to keep it quiet for their own home team. For their offense to communicate. So it's really an offensive challenge in terms of communicating through the noise. Also, I just think a lot of times when we bring that crowd noise in or even just play the music loud, our guys do recognize that, okay, that's different. And why are the coaches doing this? We're stepping into a different type of environment here. And it's not completely foreign to our guys, right? Like in terms of, crowd size and noise, the loudest place I've ever coached at is University of Tennessee. But the University of Montana, those 25,000 fans are closer than the closest 25,000 fans anywhere. Mm. And that place can be really loud. Same with Montana State. And then we have three domed stadiums, right? Those domes just bounce the noise around. So like in Moscow, Idaho, I coached at the University of Idaho. That might be the loudest game I've ever involved in. And we played a pretty good San Diego State team up there one year and beat them in a close game. And San Diego State just completely failed on all communication in the fourth quarter. We completely credited the fans with winning that game back then.
Well, Coach, I'm looking forward to this. I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to be out there. You and I have talked about family a lot. My kiddo's kind of going through some stuff and kind of needs the double team action with mom and dad around. So either way, I'll be watching most of it live. Might be watching it on delay or record because it's going to be on altitude too. So there's a big opportunity. But I just wish you the best of luck. I'm rooting for you. And congratulations on the win. Starting off the season 1-0, Coach. That's got to feel good.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a great place to be mentally. We're preparing for this next big game in a great environment, but with a win behind us and also a feeling of we can play better and will play better. any coach will tell you the real home team is that family. And so you know that I understand that you've got to take care of that first, as do I. I've got to take care of my family at home. If I can be any type of quality coach to our players, that the family at home has to be taken care of first.
I just have to change the way I tweet about the games now, because sometimes it's not live tweets. It's like later on, I'm watching it, you know, replay. So if I'm, oh, what a great catch, and then people are like, wow, you're 3.5 hours behind. So now I'm just kind of noting things throughout the game and then kind of giving the assessment later. So hopefully for the Bears' case, for the Bears' sake, we've got a lot of those positives that we're looking at after this game on Saturday.
Thank you.
All right, Coach, appreciate you as always. Football 52, find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and 1310kfk.com.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.